I'm Nate Jackson.
And I'm Eben Britton.
And this is the Caveman Poet Society.
Yeah, I mean, the VA does it. They will hand these guys truckloads of pills for nothing. So they get you addicted to these things. And then if you decide to try cannabis and you go to the VA and they test you and you pop positive for cannabis, they take away all the shit they just got you addicted to. It's insane.
Beautiful, beautiful. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Caveman Poet Society. I'm Nate Jackson. With me, as always, is Eben Britton. What's up, Eb?
Hey, my brother.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. Real good. Happy
Excellent.
To be here. Also with Jed Bauer. What's up, Jed? That's Jed.
There's Jeddy.
Gandalf's on the floor, as usual.
Gandy.
Looking comfortable. Before we get into this pod, I want to implore all you guys... Turn off your fucking phones, all right? Power down, look around, get to know your town. If you're looking at the phone, you're not going to see what's going on around you. There might be a threat to your security. There might be someone coming at you trying to rob you. The love of your life might be calling your name.
Mm.
Take out those headphones, put your phone in your pocket, and live your life. Eb, what's going on? Who's our guest in the house today?
Ow! We've got some great guests. We've got some brothers in the house today. Two guests. One guest in two people. We've got Jeff and Bill Levers of Beard Bros Farms. They are cannabis cultivators and educators. Jeff and Bill, great to have you guys. How are you?
Doing well. Appreciate it. Thanks for having us.
We are doing well. Excellent to be here.
Awesome, man. Well, we've met before at some of these cannabis conferences. We were talking earlier. I am a big fan of what you guys are doing online with your social media and your website. You're very proactive in advocacy and educating the public at large at what's happening in the cannabis space, what's happening medicinally, legislatively, and I wanted to get you guys on to have a great conversation about, you know, what you guys are doing, how you guys are being affected in this, you know, ever, you know, faster moving cannabis movement that's happening with in front of us right now. And so let's hop into it. What do you guys do exactly? And, you know, how do you feel about the cannabis industry?
It is a wild time to be alive in the cannabis industry right now. The things that are happening around president, and I mean, California is legalized. That's the largest mass of people, 40 plus million,
yeah.
Access to cannabis, bigger than any country that's legalized yet.
Mm.
Canada's coming online, but they don't even have the population of that. The education part just came around. Honestly, Jeff and I just like to stay up on current events. I mean, if it's your industry, you need to know it.
Yeah.
So part of what we've always done is just always wanted to stay educated. You know, knowledge is power. And then we realized we started putting little bits out here and there for other people, and people really appreciated it. So we just kind of took it from there, and it's developed from there.
Do you guys start as growers?
Yes, primarily cultivators.
So you started as smokers.
Yeah, we started as smokers.
How old were you guys when you started consuming?
The first time I smoked, ironically enough, I was living in Pennsylvania at the time. I grew up in State College, actually Bowlesburg, right outside of Penn State. A friend of mine, his parents were from Cal State Fullerton.
Ah.
And he had an older brother that went to Penn State, so we stole his weed. I think I was about...
the Cali connection.
I think I was about 13, maybe 14.
Yeah.
So it's been a while.
That's okay. About when I started as well.
I think
I'm finding most people have started at that age, honestly.
Yeah. I think that was my first experience as well. It was about 14 or 15.
Mine was about a month before I ever put on a football helmet and started playing football. And I consider that a blessing now, because what we're discovering among many other therapeutic benefits is it's a neuroprotectant. And so for football players that we're of course concerned with our brethren, these guys are smacking heads and they have head problems. The cannabis is helping them. you know, among many other things. Another thing, ADHD. I was kind of a hyper child. I can tell you were as well.
Yeah, that might be me.
And so instinctively, right, like maybe that calmed you down, that calmed me down. I know when I started using it, I stopped getting in trouble at school.
Yeah. You didn't even know it was medicinal.
I didn't.
But it was.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
And so you guys developed a fondness for it in your youth, and then at what some point you decided to make a career out of it.
I Jeff's 6 years younger than I am, so I was cultivating when he was in grade school. I actually started cultivating. We had a couple little outdoor grows at 15, 16 years old in Pennsylvania and in the woods. I was actually had moved to Easton, Pennsylvania by then, and us and some friends, you know, you had some weed. Hey, maybe we can just put some seeds out on the edge of the cornfield. Let's see what happens. And started with that. But
nice. How did that go?
It went. I mean, we got it. It was swag.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't any good. We were young, didn't know what we were doing. The fact that we had anything at all was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, it was just cool to smoke your own in the fall.
Yeah, definitely.
Like it got done, and hey, guess what? We didn't have to buy this. We grew it.
Yeah, so that totally, was, man.
More on to the commercial side of it was. Later on in Florida. Florida's not very conducive to growing.
Yes.
So we were highly underground.
Still a disaster.
There's still no home grow. It's sad.
Right.
People could be really helping themselves.
Well, I was having a conversation with a guy who's part of our organization, Athletes for Care, who's in Miami. He has a cannabis wellness center there. His name's Dr. Hervé Damas. And we were talking about the way it's structured there to get a license. You have to have a totally vertical operation. You've got to grow it. You've got to process it. You've got to have the retail store. You can't just have one piece of it.
Well,
and it costs millions of dollars to acquire these licenses. And, you know, you can't just be a grower. You can't just have a dispensary. You can't just have an extraction company. I mean, that sounds like a mess.
Well, and to even be eligible in Florida to be one of the people to apply for a license, you had to be a 30-year existing nursery.
Oh, yes.
So
you grew citrus trees or sugar cane for 30 years.
20 or 30 years is crazy.
Or ornamental plants, and that somehow meant you knew how to grow cannabis.
Yeah.
Does that mean they're trying to get those kind of the farmers into that industry somehow?
That could be one aspect. It could have been a nice way to pass along on the good old boy network to all their friends that have been lobbying them for two or three decades in those industries.
It was also a nice way to put it into 6 or 7 or 10 people's hands.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, exactly.
And it's essentially a controlled market monopoly. Like you have 6 processors to choose from. I like the vertically integrated part.
Okay.
Because from a perspective of us, the fact that the same people that are growing and cultivating that product are then the one making it into other final products, to me that's comforting because now you have a controlled supply chain.
Sure.
There should be many, many more options.
Sure.
Shouldn't be 6 or 7, but the vertically integrated part I like.
Because that also helps to keep your costs lower. You're not adding in a distributor level that's taking 10 or 15% and just adding it on to the top.
But does that stretch you so thin that it's hard to produce some volume?
No, I actually kind of like that model. Because to us, that's why we like, not the only reason we like the cultivation, but one of the reasons we like the cultivation is because everything comes from the flower.
Right.
Yeah.
Everything starts with the flower.
Yeah.
Good product in, good product out. It's simple. So from a maybe I'm OCD, from a control aspect, it's nice to know that your flower that you know is clean is being processed and it's going to the end user.
Right.
That is comforting. So in that aspect, I like vertically integrated.
Okay.
Letting people who had nursery experience for X amount of years, the only reasoning I could see is that those people in government were not educated enough to know that that's kind of irrelevant.
Right.
They knew how to grow shrubs in a field where they just stick a sprinkler out there and throw some fertilizer on it twice a year and spray it with some bad chemicals and that bush grows and they sell it next year. It's nothing like cannabis at all.
Right.
So you're saying there's a lot more nuance to growing cannabis than there is to growing fruit trees.
Absolutely. I'm not putting down those things. They have things that are specific to them. But yes, I think that overall, cannabis is a much, much more hands-on. To create a quality product, it's a much more hands-on product. Of course, you could put it out in the field, just harvest it to collect the trichomes, and it's kind of irrelevant what it looks like.
Like you did in the forest in Pennsylvania.
We did do that, but we weren't doing it on that scale. But we were just happy to have it because we did it.
Right.
With a sense of accomplishment.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So
that was back in probably 1985.
Yeah. Well, so you, so you got a lot of experience.
I have grown for a few decades, yes.
So you were in Pennsylvania, and then you did it in Florida for a bit?
Yes.
And then you came to California.
We actually stopped through Colorado on the way.
Oh,
we came from, we left Florida in 9, beginning of 10, because the economy was horrible. 2008, everything took a dump. Florida was still giving out 20-year sentences at that time for people they were cultivating.
That's crazy.
I don't like jail, so we decided it was, let's move west. And Colorado, we went there, and we spent a year in Nederland, a little town just outside of Boulder.
Okay.
Absolutely beautiful. God's country. It's beautiful, beautiful place. They changed the laws in Colorado in 2010. Beginning of 11, they changed the laws to where we couldn't do what we were doing anymore.
Oh, what?
And they actually...
Closed the loop.
In the beginning of 2011.
They basically closed the loop. The dispensary had to grow their own product, and they could only procure any excess product from another dispensary's excess inventory, basically shutting commercial growers out of the equation.
And even home growers. See, Colorado from 98 when they legalized until 2011, you could grow in your spare bedroom and go sell it and sell it to a collective and pay taxes on it. And you were like you were a citizen paying taxes on on a product you cultivated, right?
So, in your opinion, the recreational legalization in Colorado was not good for a lot of people.
That wasn't even rec; that was still med.
In 2011,
yeah, in 2011, they didn't go rec, I believe, until 14.
Okay,
so they gave the entire medical industry in Colorado to the couple hundred most, because there's only a couple hundred dispensaries, probably 100, 150 owners, because people owned multiple ones. They gave the entire medical industry during that time to those particular owners because nobody else could cultivate.
And now that's trimmed down by about 80%.
In Colorado?
Yeah. About 2 dozen to 3 dozen people hold most of the licensing?
Colorado. Well, I mean, it was a natural progression. What you have is a bunch. Colorado actually allowed people, except for that part, they did allow a better barrier to entry than, the Floridas and Pennsylvanias. Unless you're a multi-million-dollar company, there is no entry.
Right.
Right? So Colorado still allows people that were somewhat medium to small size to get in. You didn't have to be a multinational conglomerate, kind of like California's attempting to do with people as well. But you could still get in on it, but it's a natural process. Walmart, it happens. Many stores eventually get bought out and they become one. Yeah. Problem with California is I think they're trying to do that now. Like they're trying to do it right away. They're not wanting to give the first 5 years like they claimed to the small people that built the industry. They're trying to just go right in and let Walmart
just
take
open
over.
It up.
Yeah.
Well, and smaller entities just have less margin for error. One harvest or two harvests don't go right for you, and you're done.
Right.
Whereas a lot of these large companies are planning on 2 to 5 year burn rates to just thin the herd.
Oh, wow. Mm. Yeah. So you always hear that Colorado is kind of the model, the way they did it right. Do you disagree with that? Like, are there?
No, I wouldn't disagree with that. They were first, really, in both aspects. Well, not medical. They were only a couple years behind California medical, but they were the first to rec. So they were the example. I think they did a good job. I wouldn't say they did a bad job. I mean, the reefer madness is still alive. Just the whole fight to even gain acceptance. I mean, we were talking about this the other day. You can see alcohol sold right next to candy bars.
Yes.
And cannabis has to be 1,000 feet from a school or any other thing like that. It's just like the kids can't even see it.
It's like
they're gonna get high by seeing it. Yet they can go grab a bottle of liquor and carry it around the store if they want. It's just insane.
And Elon Musk on Joe Rogan's podcast takes not even a real hit.
No, he didn't inhale.
Yeah,
and his stock drops.
Yes, it's the stigma is still, but that's something for us to fight for.
Yeah,
we like a fight. We've been underground for years.
Yeah, we
like that
for sure.
But I want to be involved with that fight.
Yeah,
because the reality of it is we were just in Philadelphia. We went to the Boston Freedom Rally last week, and we literally you wouldn't have done this five or maybe 10 years ago. We were with some of our friends. We literally were walking through downtown Philadelphia smoking joints with everybody who was at work, suits and everything. Literally, hardly even another look. A group of 6 or 7 of us passed a joint around, literally downtown Philadelphia, went and got some lunch.
Wow.
It's becoming accepted.
Yeah.
But there's still that holdout. And I don't even want preferential treatment. I just want fair treatment.
Right.
Right. If you're going to treat alcohol that kills 88,000 plus people a year just from the alcohol, not all the other related shit.
Yeah.
And cannabis doesn't kill anybody. Why are we so scared of it? What are they so scared for? That's what I don't get.
I think they're afraid of the way that cannabis makes people think about things. It makes them challenge authority, challenge the protocol, maybe go their own way, maybe be a little more self-reliant and not buy into the bullshit.
I was going to say it's the self-reliance. It's the fact that you can grow very cheaply, can grow your own and provide for yourself very easily. And you can't do that with alcohol. You can't do that with tobacco.
Yeah.
You can't do that with pharmaceutical drugs.
Yeah, the pharmaceuticals.
You have to go to them for that.
Yeah.
It's the fact that people can be free in a country that we're supposed to be free in.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, our friend Mickey Martin used to say it's just about a little bit of freedom in a plant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No doubt, man. So Colorado, tell us a little bit, what was that landscape like when you came in? So you could just, anybody could be growing, you could have a mini cannabis operation that you could make money off of, you could start selling your product to collectives, etc. And then what was the piece of legislation that overturned that, and how does it look now?
Basically, back then, what people were operating under was the medical part to where you could have a home grow and a certain number of plants.
Uh-huh.
And they allowed you to sell your excess to a licensed Colorado collective. And that's what we would do. You know, we didn't have a lot. We were small, little room, you know, a couple pounds here and there, jobs at the same time. So we were just kind of getting into the scene.
Uh-huh.
Actually, funny story, the whole Beard Bros actually somewhat comes out of that. When we moved into Colorado, we were from Florida, so we didn't have big beards like we do now. And everybody up in the mountains had big beards. So we heard people talking about, look at these. They're moving. The feds are moving right up in here. Right? So because we knew some people there already. That's why we got there. But still, it was just funny. So we grew our beards out. When we ended up leaving and coming to L.A. in 11, nobody had beards back then. Beards weren't that cool. So now we stood out.
Yeah.
So, hey, let's keep the beards because now we got big beards and that's how we're recognizable. So
I love it.
The whole Bear Bros came from people thinking we were feds anyway. So Colorado. Now, I don't remember.
So that was without a license.
Correct. You were just a home medical grow.
That was
just anybody could do it.
And that's – California doesn't have that. Or
you could do that up until recently, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that was the same.
Same thing.
You could go sell
your
extra.
That's why we came here because you could do the same thing.
Okay.
Essentially. Obviously, once we got here, we then started up a nonprofit and became California Legal.
Okay,
because you could.
Yeah.
When we did it, the barrier to entry was paying a lawyer to set up a nonprofit. Now you're a legal California cannabis company. Those days are gone.
Yeah.
You know, it's multi-million dollars and, you know, showing assets in the bank, which who in the cannabis industry has a bank account? We're not allowed to have one.
Right.
So, I mean, just right off the bat, they're trying to alienate people who have built the industry with, oh, yeah, show us your – I mean, Pennsylvania, Florida, you couldn't get in there. You could have been the best cannabis cultivator in the world.
Right.
And you couldn't start in Florida or Pennsylvania.
I'm pretty sure Pennsylvania was $2 million in liquid assets you had to show just to apply.
Wow. Just to apply.
That you weren't using for your operation.
And application fees were non-refundable as well.
Oh, man.
It was
crazy.
They're doing this on purpose. We're watching it. I mean, literally every new state that comes online has more. Now, other than Massachusetts, actually, recently came online with recreational and they allow home grow.
Mm.
Amazed. That's awesome. That's huge.
Yeah.
We need home grow. Florida. We work with Weed for Warriors a lot. And the veterans in Florida would love to be able to grow their own cannabis and they can't.
Right.
You're essentially, you have to go to, it's a closed loop system. It's a monopoly. You have to go to one of the state ordered 7 or 8. I think they might have expanded recently to 10, 12, maybe 15 processors now that will be vertically integrated. But not allowing home grow is detrimental to veterans, to people who don't have the money to go buy exorbitantly taxed cannabis at a dispensary or a shop.
Right.
Well, the problem is that they didn't come into any of this really looking at the best interests of the patients. They looked at how are they going to set up a business and industry.
Right.
Because, I mean, you're allowing counties throughout California to ban it altogether, and then you put out a state initiative that allows for delivery everywhere in the state. So now you've just created a local municipality state fight in every county that has banned it.
Wow.
You're just gumming up the works.
So what is – so considering the momentum and what's happening around cannabis, what's cannabis industry going to look like 5 years from now, 10 years from now?
It's going to be ever evolving and completely different than it is right now, in my
opinion. We talked to a guy recently who said, oh, yeah, you know, in 5-10 years, you're going to be able to go into 7-Eleven and buy your Marlboro weed cigarette spot brought to you by Bob Marley, you know.
I think it's all going to be much more big pharmatized. It's not going to be a cigarette. They're not going to be doing a cigarette. You're going to see more of the vapes, the you know, pills, the sublinguals, all these different patches, all types of different applications to it. It's going to become much more commoditized.
Is dry flower still going to be available?
I hope so.
Yeah,
It should be. It's something I'm going to fight to continue because the reality of it is it's the easiest form to process. It's right. the easiest form to titrate.
Yeah.
It requires nothing other than hanging and curing properly after you're done.
Yeah.
It's the easiest thing for beginners to start with. Pennsylvania actually reversed what they were doing. They started up with concentrates only, so now you got these newbies out there puffing on vape pens or trying to dab, and they haven't even puffed on a joint yet. Give them one or two puffs of some good cannabis on a flower and let them see how they feel. Not tell them to dab on a on some concentrate that's 80%.
50 milligrams to the face.
Right. It's just – so they actually realized what a mistake. Plus – they didn't – I don't think they realized how inundated they were going to be with people signing up and wanting product. So so they didn't have enough processors online. And so not only did it help them now get product to market faster to keep up with demand, but it also gave people what they wanted. Now, technically in Pennsylvania – oh, no, it used to be. Is it Florida. Florida, they don't allow you still to burn – the actual cannabis flower. They, they sell it to you in a Keurig thing, which is, to me, comical.
A Keurig.
It's a Keurig, and you put it in their vaporizer.
Wow, okay.
Now, Pennsylvania, we were just there. They are actually our friends, our medical patients there, and they have product like we do here in California. It comes in eights, and it's sealed and tested, and it's interesting to see it because I...
That's in Pennsylvania?
Pennsylvania, yeah. There's legal dispensaries that are selling product just like they do here in California. It's mind-boggling to me because... we left the East Coast because they were still locking people up for 20 years. So to go back there and hear people talking about going to their local collective and stuff is just wild.
Yeah,
I'm
sure.
It is progress. There's progress. Definitely. I think that sometimes as people who advocate for more, we get impatient.
Yeah.
You know, we have to remember that this fight's been going on since the 70s.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So we are making huge strides, and there are less people going to jail. But in my opinion, until people stop going to jail for it, is it really legalization?
Right.
You know, we still have people. We work with Freedom Grow. Our friend Stephanie and Dina started it. They send money to prisoners' books. They have over 50 prisoners who are going to do life. Damn. The rest of their life right now, unless federal laws are changed, because these guys were charged federally.
Wow.
And over 50 of them will not get out in their lifetime for cannabis nonviolent offenses.
Wow.
It's insane.
Terrible.
So you can't really say we have legalization.
No.
Right.
While there's still people who could potentially spend another 20 or 30 years in jail for the same thing that we go do on a daily basis.
Well, yeah.
It's pretty insane.
Lifetime for smoking weed.
And they might not even have got life. They might have got 40 years and they were 50.
Yeah.
Sure.
40, so they're going to die in jail.
Yeah. 40, 50, still too many.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about that and we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
All up and down the avenues, the people are in pain. They sleep in pain. They awaken in pain. Even the buildings are in pain. The bridges, the flowers are in pain. And there is nothing going to release it, release us. Pain sits. Pain floats. Pain waits. Pain is. The music is bad, and the love, and the script, in this place now, as I type this, or as you read this, in your place now. Charles Bukowski. And we're back, everybody, with Jeff and Bill Levers of Beard Bros Farms. So we're talking about a lot of people in jail, man. A lot of people spending lifetime sentences in jail for marijuana convictions. And federal legalization, descheduling cannabis is number one on all of our dockets, you know, beyond really any other thing that could happen politically. I think that's what we all want, right? What do you guys see is the, what's the trajectory for that? I mean, I know that we're in this really strange time because you've got Trump in office who fucking, you know, Jesus Christ, that's a whole podcast on itself, but a guy who's big business, who you could really see, you know, Nate and I talk about it all the time. Trumpy could be a guy who could lay it out there and legalize weed. You know, to get that next election. But then he's got a guy like Jeff Sessions in there, who's, you know, the number one public enemy against the cannabis industry and the movement.
I think he starred in the Reefer Madness commercials.
Yeah. That might have been him, yeah. Actually.
So,
yeah.
Like, what are we looking at right now as cannabis operators? You know, what does it look like in this time in 2018? Where are we going?
It is, again, it's an odd and exciting time in the cannabis industry. I mean, ultimately, where I see it going, which would be like a logical progression, which means it probably won't happen like this. The states have already spent so much time setting up their own systems. The only thing I see with federal that needs to happen is deschedule. Let us have bank accounts and let the states regulate like they have been since 1996 and in medical case or 2014 and recreational. Otherwise, they're going to try to set up this whole federal bullshit, and it's not going to make any sense. They're literally, I think they've actually made that happen because they've alienated the states by saying, oh, state, you do it. No, state, you do it. We're not going to touch it.
Right.
They've created 30 different markets so far.
Right.
So ideally, what I would like to see is the feds just deschedule, right? Deschedule completely. Say it's no longer, we have medical benefits. We'll admit now. We have medical benefits to cannabis. It shouldn't be scheduled. That's no medical benefits.
Yeah, Schedule 1 means zero medical benefits,
which is ridiculous. Now, I don't want to see any of the other schedules either, personally. They make it 2, and I believe then only pharmaceutical companies can touch it. So we don't want
that'd
that
be
at
a
all.
Disaster.
I even think 3 or 5, I think they just need to deschedule.
Right.
Let's
Descheduling
not
is the thing.
Even.
But is the argument, if you're saying it is medicinal, and so are pharmaceuticals in the eyes of the government, will they be more likely to put that in with other pharma?
I believe the schedule has to do with a scoring that they do on probable death or something. There's I forget the name of the scale.
Mortality rate?
There's some kind of a scale similar to that they use this, but. If they did it on that, it would be so far down in the schedule because there's like, in other words, the higher schedule is supposed to mean the more danger of death. There's no danger of death, so it needs to be the bottom schedule.
Yeah.
But I'm not a lawyer or a politician on that, so I'm not 100% sure. Again, I'd like to see it descheduled and the feds just say, listen, we're not going to stop you from having bank accounts. Let's do business like normal people, right?
Yeah.
Let's. And I can't believe they haven't done that yet because that's one way to ensure to get every tax dollar.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like they try to catch us.
Right.
So then they can arrest us and take our shit.
Right.
And what's happening now is they're allowing Canada to start forming all of the power companies in the cannabis industry because they're allowing their money to come into California, to come into other states.
Right.
With banking backing and stock market backing, ability to do IPOs, all those types of things.
Yeah.
And just handicapping local people even further.
They can use a bank. Canadians can put their cannabis money in a bank because Canada's going to be federally legal in like a month.
Right.
But even beyond that, some of the Constellation and Tilray deals that have happened recently, Bank of America and Wells Fargo have been involved in the financing of those deals. So they're allowing American financial institutions to do deals
in Canada.
Canadian companies that they won't allow American companies to do.
Wow.
Canada's about to eat our lunch because they're allowed federally to export around the world.
Right.
There's actually, we have friends of ours already have their genetics in Canadian companies.
Yes.
Canadian companies are cultivating their genetics. They're being shipped to Germany. German people are buying genetics from America that were grown
in Canada
and dispensed in pharmacies in Germany.
What a mess.
So it's already a global economy.
Right.
When you say genetics, what do you mean exactly?
Friends of ours, a particular company.
No, but genetics.
Genetics, cultivation.
Strains.
Right. Strains,
right.
Different
right.
strains
right.
of their
right.
product.
Right, right, right.
So
right.
what are they, sending seeds? Are they sending clones?
I would imagine they started with seeds because that would be the internationally legal
way
to start. Correct.
Okay.
Would be just to start with seeds, which is fine. If you're a genetics company, it's very easy. You just start out.
Sure.
With your seeds, you know, you do the same thing that we would do, which is a pheno hunt. You pop a bunch of seeds, you grow them to fruition, you pick the ones you want, you cull the other ones that you don't want.
Okay.
They would just do the same thing, but Canada's been growing for years and years, too.
Right.
So we only know that that's happening because friends of ours here in SoCal are involved with a company that's doing that.
I think
so
we heard
firsthand.
We heard that in a conversation a little while ago, too.
Yeah.
But a comparable analogy would be 20 years ago when the tech boom popped. They didn't allow any United States financial institutions to invest in that, and they only allowed Chinese or Japanese companies to invest in any tech company.
Yeah.
It's insane.
How would the industry look today compared to the way it does?
Right.
The entire NorCal San Jose area is built on those companies that formed out of that.
Yeah.
It's no different with this, except it's a commodity that reproduces. It's not a bubble.
Yeah, there's a, for instance, in the news now, Oregon. I just read Oregon. Is lobbying to be able to move their cannabis out of Oregon. They've got 1 million extra pounds in their metrics. They only consume 300,000 pounds a year. They've got a 3-year surplus from 1 or 2 years.
Jeez.
And they're now lobbying to see if they can ship around the country. So
Wow.
The federal would be amazing. If feds just said, okay, you know, as long as you're following, that's going to be the issue. They're going to have to come up with something interstate because
right.
Colorado's got different rules in California and different testing
right.
rules and blah, 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 blah. So there's going to be some kind of federal
yeah.
either shipping.
Minimum standards.
Yeah, minimum standards, I would think. I just hope they don't try to come in and re-regulate and
right.
re-tax on top of everything the state's already doing.
Now, with alcohol, there's a federal system. Is that under a federal structured system?
I believe it is, and then they just have distribution that's done by area or state.
Okay.
Because like I know in Pennsylvania, you can't even buy liquor except at state stores. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, in Utah, yeah. I mean, certain places
Utah
in Utah
as well,
you can't buy,
yeah.
probably can't buy any in Salt Lake.
No.
And there's dry counties in the southeast
yeah.
as well.
We lived in the southeast, and there was counties that didn't sell on Sundays and
yeah.
things
right.
like that. So I believe it's just a overall, you know, guideline. But then they did it federally. Right? When Prohibition went, I believe in the 30s, when it came back up, they just did it federally. They didn't do one state by one state until there was 30 states.
They did it. It's accepted everywhere. And then you have to restrict the access, not we're going to restrict the access everywhere. That's
right.
kind of the oxymoron, the way they're doing it now, is they're restricting access everywhere as opposed to accept it everywhere. Now, if your little pocket doesn't want it, show us a reason why or come up with your own regulation.
Right.
You're doing it backwards.
I mean, my opinion. The only overall reason we have legalization on any type of level is because finally through social media, the whole reefer madness stigma has worn off.
Right.
I mean, I grew up in the 80s. Nancy Reagan, just say no.
Yeah.
You know, McGruff.
Right.
All that stuff.
The DARE,
literally
the DARE program, which has now removed cannabis from the list of substances that
yeah,
they
DARE
actually
removed cannabis. Oh.
DARE to keep kids off drugs.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
The only reason I feel we're even where we're at with legalization is because public opinion has changed. They watch the deaths that come from alcohol and tobacco, and they don't see it, even from an illicit market of cannabis.
Right.
You don't see it. So what's happening is the politicians are now realizing, hey, if I don't take an at least somewhat medical stance, they're still shying away from rec, but if I don't take at least a medical stance, I'm not going to get the votes I need. So what they've done is they've switched gears from enforcement to how do we take this industry that I have to approve of now and give it to the people who have been supporting me, which is big business.
The other reason that it's become more prolific is because more people are getting directly exposed to either a family member or a friend that has something that cannabis can help.
Right.
Autism rates are up, epilepsy rates are up, diabetes rates are up, all these things that cannabis can help. Fibromyalgia, rheumatoid arthritis, those things are increasing because of everything else that people ingest into their bodies.
Yeah.
And cannabis is the thing that can help the most with the least amount of side effects to all of that. So more older people are having a nephew, an aunt, an uncle, a sister, a brother with some affliction, and they go, wow, I thought cannabis was just for getting high. It just saved my family member's life or improved their lifestyle.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's the part that gets us excited, gives us goosebumps.
And the opioid scourge.
Yeah, the opioid
115 Americans per day die of an opioid overdose.
Who knew cannabis was an
exit
drug?
Exactly.
Exactly.
Exactly. It's got the pharmaceuticals companies scared, but the people are you know, opening their minds to the fact.
It is a gateway drug. It's just the other way out the gate.
Right.
It's not in.
Purdue Pharma and that Sackler company are criminal. They are mass murderers, in my opinion.
The ones who make
That company should be shut down. Bankrupt, and that family should be charged with deaths. I'm not gonna lie, they have profited through lying about the addiction rates. They actually the reason the opioids got so bad is because they literally sent out sales forces to doctors and lied to them and told them
it's safe,
that this
it's not
was
addictive.
Safe. We made it a time release formula. It's not going to get people addicted. Meantime, 3 days you're addicted to that shit.
And there you go.
Give it up. Listen, the more scripts you do, we'll invite you to our seminar in the Bahamas.
Yeah.
By the way,
it's bullshit. Those people should be charged, in my opinion.
And that's FDA approved products as well.
Right. Absolutely.
Well, cannabis is a difficult product to get FDA approval because it's of its complexity, correct? I mean, these pills like opioids or whatever, it does one thing.
Yeah.
But cannabis, like you said, does all these different things. And so how do you get through to the FDA and let them, you know, approve a drug that you say is good for everything?
Right.
Actually, what that comes down to is pharmaceuticals are, in essence, a singleized chemical.
Right.
Okay. The reason cannabis works on so many things is because there's 80 cannabinoids,
right?
100 terpenes, a couple hundred terpenes, a couple hundred flavonoids. It's got all these things. So to me, that's the beauty of cannabis. It's
Absolutely.
Got the entourage effect.
Yeah.
And that's what Big Pharma hates.
Right.
Because the reality of it is the side effects are like sleep and hunger and shit like that.
Yeah.
And it is kind of almost a one size fits all. Of course, as we progress, we're going to realize that CBG works better to help these particular ailment, or CBNs are better for this, or CBG.
What is CBG and what is CBN? We hear about THC and we hear about CBD. Yep. That's really all we know.
Right. The reason you hear of those two primarily is they're the two main ones. Anytime you do a testing on a flower or an extract, you're going to find out what those are contained in. Again, THC, CBD, main two. CBG, what we actually learned, we're learning every day too. I've done this for decades, but I learned just a couple months ago at an event we were at, all cannabinoids start their life with the plant as CBG.
Right. That's the mother.
And they all come from that. So you can measure CBG levels now and find out if the plant got underripe, ripe, or overripe by the percentage of CBG once you know that plant. Oh. And that means that you've now reached the maximum potential of the plant to convert to other cannabinoids.
Mm.
So the other cannabinoids, off the top of my head, I'm going to be bad, CBG, CBN, CBCs, a couple of the other major ones, they're in really small percentages.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't hear about them because they're not that prevalent, but there is research being done, and I can't wait to find out. There's 80 of them, right? There's no telling what we're going to be able to unlock and what we're going to be able to do.
Potentially down the line, could you be seeing cannabis that's grown to have very high levels of THCV and CBN and CBG and those, and maybe less THC, less CBD? Why does THC and CBD seem to be so prolific in the plant rather than the others? Is there an ability to sort of breed it in a way that all those other cannabinoids are popping?
Yes. The answer to your question is yes. Cannabis is amazing. A lot of people don't realize this. Cannabis is a very rare plant in the plant world. Most plants are asexual, an oak tree.
Right,
grows an acorn, drops it down. It's an exact replica of the mom because it had no other input.
Sure.
Cannabis breeds like people.
Yeah.
So every time a different piece of pollen hits a different receptor on the female, you have a completely genetically different plant. They might be similar because they had the same two parents, but just like people, we all know, even twins put in different environment.
Right.
Can be different. Interesting story about THC and CBD and why they're the ones. I'll be honest with you. I think our strains prior to the drug war in the 70s when it was cultivated for a specific purpose. When it's illegal, the purpose is to get high.
Right.
So in my opinion, what happened to cannabis while it was underground, obviously since its tax stamp happened in the 30s, but then in 70s especially, is THC was bred up and everything else was thrown out.
Right.
They just didn't know they were throwing it out because they only grew the ones that got you high
because
those were the only ones they could smuggle into the country to get paid for. So in my opinion, CBD was bred out almost completely in the 30 years of the drug war before we really started even knowing there was different components. I believe it was the 90s until they even figured out. It was 80s they found THC, or was it the 60s? I get mixed up with my dates on this. It wasn't the endocannabinoid system was the 90s. THC, I think, was in the 60s.
Okay.
So all they knew was THC even in the 60s, and there was no more stuff to it. So in my opinion, we increased the THC unknowingly through prohibition.
So a simplified version of what's happening there is the growers are going – growing plants, testing them out, seeing which one gets us the highest, throwing out the rest, and continuing with that plant.
Next year.
The THC just kept getting more
because you're getting high
with
THC, not CBD.
It's kind of like a band just trying to put out radio hits and not making a complete
real
album
music
that can actually get to you.
Good exactly. Analogy.
So are growers starting to breathe the CBD back in? Are they starting to make a more complete profile?
100%. There are CBD high strains. See, now that we can test, it's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah.
Okay. When there was no testing and you were hiding and you only wanted the best pot to get the most money because you were compressing it and shoving it in a gas tank and driving it across the border, whatever they were doing. You went for the money because that's what they were doing. We've been doing testing for years now, and it's amazing to see this stuff. So the answer to your question is yes. The problem is it's not at the level I would like to see it, because we're all just fighting to stay alive. Mm-hmm. Right. Like I don't have a lab that I can just go mad scientist out in. I would love that.
So how do you test your products?
You take it to a testing facility.
Okay.
So you do – basically, the only thing you're actually giving the public or the people at the testing facility is what you have. You're not telling anybody what you're going to do still. Mm. Like, what's your plan? Like, how are you trying to do that? What plants are you trying to breed together in order to achieve the goal? There are people that are doing it. We're on a smaller level than a lot of people. But I would love to just mad scientist out with a lab and a whole bunch of different male and female plants and breed them and see what I can do with different cannabinoid levels.
And how do you breed them? Just like rub them together?
Full disclosure, I am not a breeder. There are guys who are way more known with it than I am, but I do know the basics. Breeding is simply you have a female that you like. You select all cannabis, either male or female. So the first process is you plant the seeds, get them going. Then you sex them. Find out if it's a male or female. The only people that keep males around are breeders. And you have to keep them separate because you don't want them pollinating your females until it's time. So the answer to your question is you grow them up. You select your males and your females. You allow them to breed. You allow the seed to become full cycle, finished seed. And then you harvest that seed. Like I was saying earlier, you end up even the same seed, even a seed, two seeds in the same bud have different traits because cannabis has a DNA sequence just like humans. So as a breeder, your goal is to find seeds that you know are going to be similar as you sell the seeds. And that's where breeding them into themselves, actually inbreeding them generation to generation till you get an even spectrum of what you're trying to sell to the public as a breeder. So that's an important part too. Again, I'm not trained in breeding. This is just what I've known, found out from people I've talked to and my understanding of it.
Well, you know a lot more about it than we do, and we're going to continue talking about that right after this break.
If you're like me and you take Tabrizium to help with the side effects of the Movantik that you take for opioid-induced constipation, caused by your pain medication, you may find yourself suffering from mood swings
and erratic behavior. God damn it!
That's why I take Tabrizium. Tabrizium helps me control the natural emotional outbursts that occur when taking Tabrizium, so I can lead a happy, normal life.
Side effects of Tabrizium may include insomnia, narcolepsy, Cartesian windpipe, auditory hallucinations.
What was that?
Obtuse paranoia.
There's somebody nausea, talking. Do you not hear that?
Heartburn.
They're just
headaches.
Listing things.
Red bars disorder, dry mouth, wet mouth, and Stockholm syndrome.
Now that I have Tabrizium, I can take all the Tabrizium I want because you're not my dad. You can't tell me what to do. I'm going home.
We're back with the Cannabis Bros, and we're talking about cannabis. Big surprise. And we wanted to talk in our last segment a little bit about cultivating what they grow, the products they like to distribute, specifically cannabis oil. You guys have some cannabis oils that you produce and that you're rather proud of. Could you talk a little bit about that?
We had seen that there was a lack in the market. Okay, there was tons of $100 grams and tons of $80 eights and all this expensive stuff. But when we would go into the places, we found that they rarely had a reliable source of cannabis oil. And from our experience, one of our friends, Stephanie, who is Freedom Grow director, the one we talked about earlier that gets money to the guy's books who are doing life in jail, she actually had cancer and beat the cancer with RSO. She'll tell you herself. She actually got. This lady, she's somewhat of a minor legend, I would say. She got locked up in her 60s for cultivation. They gave her 4 years fed time.
Oh, my.
And when she got out near 70, she had cancer.
Oh, wow.
And she beat the cancer. And she's now the person who's still sending money to people in jail who didn't get out. So
she credits the oil with beating the cancer.
100%. 100%.
Do you know the science behind why oil kills cancer?
I do.
That's Rick Simpson oil we're talking about, RSO.
Yes, RSO. We actually call it full spectrum. Know. Yeah. We like to call ours full spectrum cannabis oil. RSO is a good connotation for it. If you're following the exact recipe for RSO, you're using a product called Naphtha, which is a commercial cleaner or solvent. Okay. We use alcohol. We use an alcohol extraction with ours. We use actually an organic food certified alcohol.
Okay.
Same process. Anytime you're extracting, you're using a solvent. Hmm. The solvent doesn't really matter as long as you remove it all afterwards. Hmm. I'm just not a fan of using like paint thinner.
Yeah.
For our extraction method. Yeah. So we use alcohol. The reason we call it full spectrum is an alcohol extraction retains the largest entourage or remaining effects of the whole cannabis plant. Hmm. So in my opinion, and from what I've read and what I understand, an alcohol extraction gives you the closest to what the flower is just in concentrated forms. Whereas some of your super critical ones, just the cold and or the heat or whatever the process is, you lose things, which you don't necessarily do with an alcohol extraction. Forgot where we were.
We're
talking about cancer.
Stephanie.
And the oil.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. And
the oil in general.
Sorry, go ahead.
The oil in general. And the other reason we call it full spectrum oil is that we don't use a single strain whenever we do our batches of this. We're usually typically doing 4 to 6 strains. So you're getting some sativa, some indica in there. What we actually refer to it is cannabis cannabinoid stacking, because you're getting multiple profiles combining into that. And that's what gives it such an even-keeled effect. You're not a super sativa up and running around. You're not knocked out from it, but it provides the medical benefits that people need.
Yeah. So that doesn't compromise any of the strain. You know, when you're throwing it all together like that, it doesn't compromise the effectiveness of certain cannabinoids?
I would actually argue it increases it.
Okay.
Yeah, we argue it enhances it. If one plant has an entourage effect, but now you can use 5 plants with 5 entourage effects, and when you're extracting it, you're just stacking them up. Like he said, we coined it cannabinoid stacking. Because if one strain you're using is 0.5% CBD, right, and you just extracted that one, that's what you would end up with, the equivalent to the 0.5. But if another plant has another 0.5, another plant has 0.7, another plant has 0.1, now you're almost at 3% CBD because you're combining them. So you get, in our opinion, you get actually a entourage effect on steroids, so to speak. We noticed that there was a lack of reliable product for people, and we had heard from Stephanie, and we decided it was something we wanted to do. Instead of trying to make some kind of flashy $100 gram of wax for us to sell or shatter or sauce or whatever the new rage is, we thought, you know, we'll take our product and we'll put it into something that benefits people medicinally. And we found that the returns on that are just phenomenal as far as being able to help people. The feedback we get on it is amazing. Also, our product, we don't use pesticides, so we could be rest assured that we were giving sick people completely clean medicine.
Yeah.
That was huge to us. And that was huge to the people we wanted to help to make sure that they were getting clean medicine. They're already in a bad state if they need cannabis oil to begin with. You don't need to compound it.
Yeah.
So we have just found it to be amazing for everything from epilepsy to cancer to autism. Yeah. We have just found the feedback on the oil phenomenal as far as how it helps.
So the epilepsy reduces the seizures.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
Cancer shrinks or stops the cancer cells from growing?
Yes. That's actually what we were going to get to, and I forgot about that one. The way it works is on a cellular level, all of your cells have CB receptors, so they accept cannabinoids. Your body makes them. Your mother's milk has it. Other plants have it. I think juniper is one of them. Mm-hmm. They're just not as prolific as cannabis. So the way it works on the concept behind killing cancer, a cancerous cell is a cell that did not have its switch turned off to stop growing.
Right.
Okay, so that's why cancerous mass expand and get bigger. So those cells don't know how to shut themselves off.
Right.
So what cannabinoids do when they get into the cells, they promote homeostasis. You can actually affect apoptosis, which is the body ridding itself of a bad cell.
Yeah.
If a cell gets crazy, the body has a mechanism to do that. Cancer cells are not allowing the body to do that.
Right.
So the goal is to bombard your endocannabinoid system with cannabinoids in hopes, because we don't have the medical research why yet, but in hopes that one of those cannabinoids is going to unlock something. And we have people that we've given our oil to who have reduced cancer masses.
Amazing.
So, yeah, it's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, you hear it all the time. I mean,
we do. And friends of ours have documented cases of cancer being cured. It's just the mainstream, and people like such don't They don't acknowledge it.
They don't listen to the anecdotes.
They don't.
You know, the anecdotes aren't enough for them. Yeah.
This person's still alive. That's not enough, right?
Yeah.
Had to be something else.
And then they don't give us the opportunity to do the actual research to prove to them that it's effective.
Right, because part of the descheduling, it's not just about the banks, but it's about research.
Absolutely. Well, yes. I'll be honest with you. There are people that are doing private research now. Yeah. People that have just said, you know what? We're tired of this. We're not allowed to research it. Guess what? If I'm a legal company in California right now,
yeah,
I can hire somebody to research all I want.
Sure.
Sure, it's not going to be UCLA approved or whatever yet.
Yeah.
But if you unlock it, who cares?
Well, UCLA is doing
their
own research.
They are doing some. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, I know of people who have businesses in SoCal that have scientific people that they're going to be doing their own research.
That's great.
It's pretty phenomenal.
That's great.
And it's sad. It's sad. Yeah. The only stuff you can get right now, Sue Sicily is a friend of ours. Yeah. She works closely with Weed for Warriors.
Yeah.
The only time she got product from Mississippi, from the federal cannabis farm, it was moldy and it was shit.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Like, seriously, you've been doing this since 19... what are they sending out to the patients that still get their tin of joints? Are they sending them PM and shit? Yeah. It doesn't even make any sense to me that the people who have been growing it for the government for 20 years can't grow product without PM.
Well, we talked about
what
last
is PM?
Week.
Powdery mildew, I'm sorry.
Powdery mildew.
Yeah.
Well, they're not cannabis lovers.
You think in 20 years they'd figure the shit out?
They need to send people there who don't have the passion.
Well, they don't care, I guess. Right. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this last week on another pod. That my question is it, you know, intentional sabotage? You know, is it a way for them to go, well, see, it doesn't really work.
Well,
you know, it doesn't work that well.
Without disrespecting our veterans, I've been telling a lot of them and a lot of other people that this basically is war. There's subterfuge going on. There's double agents going on. There's attrition. There's all those types of things that you see tactic-wise in war being applied to this, because it started out as a grassroots community of helping sick people. And now it's a money grab for an industry. It's gone from a community to an industry in 15 years, at least in California.
Yeah.
And that divide is what has to get figured out. All the older people like us that have been involved in it, gone to jail for it, been fighting for it, all have that passion and human interest. And the people that are coming in now, it's a bottom line business. They're just, it's basically a fight.
Yeah.
For which side's going to win out. Not much different than what's going on in the general country right now.
Yeah.
People with compassion, people who are only looking out for business interests.
I mean,
where do you fall?
Yeah, I mean, the VA does it. They will hand these guys truckloads of pills for nothing.
Yeah.
So what they do is they come back and they have some injuries and some pain and some PTSD. So they start them out on some Moxies or Lortabs or whatever. And then they have some PTSD. So here, take these antipsychotics and throw a benzo in there. Okay, so now you're on an Oxy and you can't shit. So now you got to take something to shit.
Movantic.
Now you're stressed out. So now your blood pressure's high. So now you're on opiates, anti-diarrheal. You're on 10 pills.
Yeah.
Before you know it. So they get you addicted to these things. And then if you decide to try cannabis and you go to the VA and they test you and you pop positive for cannabis, they take away all the shit they just got you addicted to. It's insane.
You're fucked.
It's insanity that they treat our veterans like that. It gets us fired up and mad about it. You know?
It is. It is
and
insane.
Not only that, but there's such... I've heard that there is a long waiting list to be seen at some of these veterans' hospitals. And so you go there with a problem. They say, we can't see you for 3 months. I know you're in a lot of pain. Here's a prescription until then. And so before they even see what's going on with you, they're giving you pills.
Well, I mean, forget the waiting list. How about 22 a day of them dying? How about them going to the VA and setting themselves on fire outside the VA building? Yeah. As a way to protest as they die. Like,
that's happened.
How much of a wake-up call does the country need? We're concerned about athletes kneeling during the national anthem and vet, you know, being concerned with vets, and we're allowing that to happen on a daily basis.
It's,
so you're wearing a Weed for Warriors shirt. So obviously this is an issue you guys care a lot about. Talk about some of the work you guys are doing with veterans.
Absolutely. It's a group that kind of spawned here out of San Jose, a veteran who himself was looking to get access to cannabis and educate other vets and provide access to them. He started the chapter up in San Jose in 2013. We were involved from the first SoCal meeting that they had of the chapter down here. And they basically meet every month as somewhat of a battle buddy type of a situation, get around fellow vets in the area that you can talk to if you need to.
Yeah.
If you're out of meds, they may have meds to help you with. And then ourselves and other companies like us donated meds to them at these meetings to disperse out to their people. Also went there to talk to them about wanting to do home grow, how to go about doing that. There's been some vets we've donated genetics to when they found a particular strain that worked for them. There's a couple of that we've grown that we've had feedback that's really helpful and beneficial for PTSD and for things like that. So we've gotten those strains to those vets to be able to grow themselves.
Amazing.
Yeah, the whole concept is the veterans realize they're being poisoned. I mean, come on, they got common sense, right?
Right.
When you got eight pill bottles, you got to put that into your thing every day. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So they're looking for an alternative. And again, it just drives me nuts that they give them all these pills and it kills them slowly, right?
Yeah.
And they could be using cannabis. But the whole concept that we for Words was, hey, just come together, right? People like us can come in and explain the different forms of using cannabis, you know, smoking, edibly, topicals, sublinguals, suppositories, explain how it works, provide them with samples.
Yeah.
Can't do that anymore because California doesn't allow that right now. We're working on a bill to go through to allow compassion programs, but 64 got rid of all the compassion programs. I cannot donate product directly to a person in need anymore. So what this did is this brought veterans together, and this veteran can say, hey, this strain, I like this strain, helps me when I'm feeling like this, or that strain helps me like this, or try that.
Yeah.
And it's like he said, it's a battle buddy camaraderie thing to where you're not alone.
Yeah.
You know, other people are going through this and this helps them. And guess what? It doesn't make you constipated and it doesn't make you crazy. And it doesn't make you wake up in the middle of the night and drive your car into a lake because you took an Ambien because you can't sleep from the damn painkillers they gave you.
Right.
I mean, it's just like, again, entourage effect all the way around. Yeah. It helps with all of that.
Yeah.
And that's one of the beautiful things about cannabis. It's a medicine you can take with others. It's a communal collective medicine. And I think that kind of freaks some people out about it because they don't, you know, a lot of these establishment medical people say medicine is something you take intravenously or a pill, while prescription, white lab coat, a doctor office, you do it by yourself. It's supposed to taste yucky, you know. Meanwhile, you got this medicine that's actually done in a community, and it forms a community.
And another vet group that we actually work with kind of takes that to the next level. They're called Veterans Walk and Talk, and that's what their goal there is. Every weekend, they go out and do a hike somewhere. He goes actually
Love
down.
That.
They go down and pick up vets from the VA that don't have their own vehicle, carpool them out. They've gone up to Runyon Canyon. They've gone up to the Bridge to Nowhere, a whole bunch of other places, and it's kind of spawned to that. Now, once a month, they actually go downtown to Skid Row with Beauty in the Streets that does showers and all types of toiletry products for homeless. They go down and they do that 1 month a week. So, but it's the same thing. It's getting them out socializing, and that's how he portrays it. We'll have meds for you guys for the hike, whether it be edible, sublingual, flower, and you guys come out, socialize with us, get out and be active, and use cannabis along with it.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Shout out to Colin with Veteran Walk and Talk.
Most definitely.
That's awesome.
That's one of the things we talk about a lot in here is tribe, finding your tribe outside of, for us, it was outside of sports. You know, we were football players our whole lives, and all of a sudden you're plucked out of that world and dropped out here, and you're by yourself. All your buddies who you hung out with all the time are gone. Your team's gone. Your sense of direction is gone. Your doctors are gone. Anyone who was helping you is gone, and you got to kind of form your own new community.
And you're dealing with a lot of the same type of issues.
Yeah. Same
body parallels. Body and mind.
Yeah. And there's so many parallels. We were talking earlier, not only veterans and professional athletes, but I talked to a guy that's a tugboat captain.
Right.
Right? And he would love to use cannabis.
Right.
But he says to me, they force me to use alcohol and pills.
Right.
Because that doesn't matter what I test on those, right?
Right.
And everybody needs something, let's face it. You know, there are people who do nothing, and that's fine. That's great. That's their choice. But everybody wants a little something to take the edge off. I mean, it's life. Come on. So
no doubt.
The reality of it is there's people who are forced to use things that are deadly to them and others because they can't use cannabis. It's just insanity.
Cops.
Same thing, cops. Paramedics.
Cops need to be able to go home
pilots.
And smoke a joint.
Man,
and
you
go
don't
to
think
sleep.
Those cops that see a drunk driver that wiped out a family and a dead baby laying on the road doesn't benefit from going home and be able to use cannabis that night?
Yeah.
It's
absolutely, man.
Much more productive than going and getting drunk and popping some pills. And
1,000% more productive.
Yeah.
And the other group we were talking about a little bit before that's somewhat forgotten is the elderly. the amount of pharmaceuticals right. that we put on the yeah. elderly on, and the cocktails that they have to go into assisted living or nursing homes and just kind of live out a slow death, as opposed to an alternative like cannabis that could have them actually feeling and acting and living yeah. younger than they are.
Absolutely. Just imagine bingo. Everybody's got some edibles and a little joint before they come in for bingo.
And so
that's where I want to retire at, right?
Yep. And so you're saying that cannabis for elderly is safe for people who have high blood pressure or maybe a pacemaker or something like that? It's okay?
Absolutely.
It's the safest. Think about it. The drugs you take have a list of side effects. The right. pharmaceuticals have a list yeah. of side effects longer than the damn what they're curing.
Yeah.
Right? Cannabis actually can enhance their life as well. Not only is it safe for them, it enhances life. It's funny. When Jeff and I left Colorado or left Florida, I said to him, I said, you know what I want to do? We're coming back to Florida, and we're going to replace every fucking Ambien prescription with an indica pill. We're going to have all these old people sleeping instead of taking that Ambien and doing shit they don't remember the next day.
Yeah, love it.
I'll bet
yeah.
Roseanne Barr wish she was using more cannabis than Ambien.
Yeah, no shit. Wow. No shit, man.
Wow.
Well, that's there's more. I got a couple more questions, but you know we're about out of time here, guys.
We'll have to come back.
Yeah, yeah.
No doubt, man.
There's lots more to talk about.
We appreciate the hats and the t-shirts. Is there anything? Why don't you guys plug all your stuff? Tell people where they can find you, the organizations you're working with, and all that good stuff.
Okay. We're cultivators first. So over the years, we've made a wide range of products. Again, we feel that everything starts with the flower. To us, that's the beginning of any cannabis product starts with the flower and the care and the love you put into it. We have had – California's got some changes. We currently do not have any products in the California legal markets.
Okay.
We are in a waiting pattern for a license like a lot of people. L.A. has not been friendly to small business. Technically, there are no collectives in L.A. except 165 pre-ICOs that are able to grow right now. Mm. So there's no cannabis cultivation in L.A. right now. So we're working with some people outside waiting on licensing. So we've made everything from hot chocolate. We were pretty well known back in 13 or 14. We had a cushy cocoa. We had nice. Several flavors of cushy cocoa and edibles. We made reefer ranch and highly Italian salad dressings and dips. Obviously, we've had all of our strains. We're made into concentrates. We're very proud of our cannabis oil that we make, our full spectrum oil. Anything you want to add to that,
John? I mean, the education and advocacy we put out on the Beard Bros Farms Instagram, and that's farms with a PH. We did that actually back in 2012, 2013 when we formed, kind of forward thinking and seeing where the industry was going to be going, that while we were farmers, it was going to be a lot more ancillary products that were not just flour. And our website, beardbrosfarms.com, we put out 3 to 5 original articles every week. Mm. We do a Friday newsletter that gives you the update on all of that, but it's great morning toilet reading for everybody.
Nice.
Awesome.
We joke about that. We also have the shirts and hats that you guys got are available on our site at www.beerbrosfarms.com.
Awesome.
Farms with a PH.
Beautiful, man.
Love it.
And definitely going to have some hoodies, some sweatshirts, those types of things coming out now in the cold weather.
A lot yes. of swag.
And we do have some collabs we can't talk about right now, but in the next couple of weeks, we're going to have a collab with Beard Bros and a larger company in the industry.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, it was great having you guys.
It was great being here.
Really appreciate you guys coming and dropping some knowledge. And all you listeners, we love you guys so much. Thank you so much for tuning in week after week. You know where to find us. You can subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, anywhere you find a podcast. We are on Instagram at Caveman Poet Society, on Twitter at Caveman Poet Pod. Check out our website, cavemanpoetsociety.com. Find all our episodes, Nate's books, other things we're up to. You guys know what to do. Put the phone down, take a walk outside, get some sunshine, go hug a neighbor, get out and involved in your community, eat the right foods, use the right medicine, meditate. And until next time, we'll see you.
Everybody did a really good job on the pod. Said everybody did a really good job on the pod. Said everybody did a really good job on the pod. Said everybody did a really good job.
Nice. Evan.
Yo.
Did a really good job on the pod.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You. Nathan.
Yes.
Did a really good job on the pod.
Thanks, Eb. Beard Pros.
Beard Pros.
Did a really good job on the pod.
Bill and Jeff, you did a really good
and
job.
And Jed, you did a really good job on the pod.
Yeah, you did, Jed.
Everybody did a really good job.